Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Conversations On, where the YMCA of the North engages with local and national leaders about their experiences, their insights, and their aspirations. I'm Henry Lake with WCCO Radio. Today, CEO Glenn Gunderson gets to know University of Minnesota men's basketball coach Ben Johnson. We learn how his upbringing molded his leadership style as a young coach. Find out how his life lessons shaped his roadmap for building a successful team.
All right. Hey, Ben Johnson, so great to have you in studio. And I am a big Gopher fan, so this has been something I've been looking forward to for a while. Thanks for joining us.
No, I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, lots to talk about. I'd love to start with leadership and now emerging into this head coach role. Before we get there, though, talk about your childhood coming out of South Minneapolis. What was that like and how did you find the game?
You know, I couldn't have probably asked for a better childhood in terms of, you know, being able to experience it all. You know, I was the type of kid and grew up in an area with kids that, you know, we were outside on our bikes almost all the time in the summer. You know, whether that was looking for parks to go play open gym, at each other's houses, looking for dunkable hoops when we were younger, we could go play 21. You know, that's kind of childhood I had, and I grew up with in a really close-knit community. I started off playing and really got involved with basketball in about fifth grade with the Washburn traveling system and had a great core group of friends. There was about five or six of us, and we were about as thick as thieves from that point on and through high school and still even pretty close today. So to just be around those guys and be kids – and do kid things and be involved in the community and go to the Y's, you know, all that I think helped contribute to, you know, who I am, my love for the basketball, my love for the game, you know, my involvement in my love for, you know, trying to find ways to give back, especially in the community south of North Minneapolis where I spend a lot of my time. So I couldn't have asked for a better early upbringing, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, it seems like this is missing for kids now too, right? I mean, that whole bike around the neighborhood, be engaged outdoors, you know, away from screens. And you're probably one of the lucky ones. I got a whole lot of years on you, so we didn't have any screens to deal with then, but you're one of the lucky ones that was still in that era of just going out and creating and finding that fun. What's it like? How would you contrast it to the young kids that you're recruiting now? And the upbringing and what they're living through, the environment they're living through nowadays?
It's definitely different. I think one of the biggest obstacles, I'll say, is the social media standpoint. I think, you know, it's so heightened. And that was something that, you know, in college maybe had to deal with the beginning stages of it. But growing up, you know, we didn't have anywhere near the social media, the scrutiny, the microphone, the publicity, all that comes with it. It was just non-existent. So, you know, we were able to kind of just play and enjoy playing for the purity of what it is. And, you know, I was fortunate enough growing up too to play in every sport. You know, I was the kid that if football was on season, it was during football, I wanted to go out and play football. If it was the spring and the summer and baseball was on TV, I wanted to go out and play baseball. You know, obviously I was involved in basketball, but, you know, whatever sport was going on or in season, I wanted to play and take part in. And I think sometimes now you see things are very individualized. I think I don't know exactly what contributes to that, but I do. I feel like sometimes across the board, whether it's, you know, adults or whether it's a kid, especially from early ages, they don't broaden their horizons as much and try different things and get involved in different activities and different sports. And we become so centralized in, you know, one specific thing, especially at an early age. You know, I love to recruit kids that are multi-sport athletes. I just feel like it teaches you so much about life. I think it's good for your body. I think it's good for your mind. And unfortunately, I feel like we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit.
Yeah, indeed. You know, and I wonder how much you think the AAU culture has contributed to that, kind of the social media plus AAU. I've raised a couple kids playing basketball, one still in high school at Orono, and De La Salle used to be our arch nemesis, of course. Not in the same section, thankfully, right now. But that this over-indexing of that individual sport and the specialization, I couldn't agree more. I mean, this is a really interesting challenge for young people, and you see more burnout, you see kids having, you know, not nearly the same kind of three-legged stool of balance, you know? And so I'm really interested in your perspective on the AAU culture. What do you see there? Because obviously you got to be out in that circuit, looking for athletes, to become Golden Gophers.
Yeah, no, we definitely are. And, you know, I feel like I grew up in AAU, you know, I played it. It you know, it was a big part of exposure, not only for myself, but for my teammates and for kids, obviously present. It's a great opportunity to get out and play against the best, play in front of college coaches and have an opportunity to have your skills be shown. It obviously now is taking on kind of a life of its own in terms of just the amount of games and tournaments that these kids are able to play. And so I think AAU can be a great platform. I really do. I think, again, just the exposure element that it can provide to, you know, kids from all levels across all states, I think is valuable. I think, I guess my worry would be just, especially when you're coming and you're speaking from the adult standpoint, of really navigating it the right way and not getting so caught up in, okay, I need my kid to be the next LeBron James. And so in order to do that, we've got to work around the clock and can't have any outside distractions. It must be in the gym 24/7, 365 and have the trainer and the strength coach. That scares me sometimes. You know, I think there's a fine line. You know, if a kid is driven and wants to do it, I think that's one thing. I think it's a fine line when maybe that isn't the case. Because it's hard, you know, and I think sometimes, especially when you go back to social media and you see Division I offers that kids publicize. I think sometimes it paints the picture that it's really easy to become a Division I athlete, and that becomes the standard for all kids that play and compete. And I think that's kind of unfair sometimes because, you know, human nature comes into play and DNA comes into play. And, you know, there could be a handful of kids that work extremely hard and love the game and have passion. But, you know, especially when you're talking about playing at a Power Five or in the Big Ten, you know, there's a level of athleticism that you have to have. There's a level of height, size that you have to have that's God given, you know. And I just worry when the bar or the level of success is a Division I standard or is a Big Ten standard. There's a lot of kids that can be successful and be winners and champions and don't necessarily ever get here. And I think that's okay. And so I do worry sometimes about when stuff on a social media standpoint gets marketed to a level, of where it's at. You don't want kids to feel like they're failures already at a young age, you know, in high school, because they're either not receiving offers, not receiving attention, or not able to go to a certain level. And I think it's a little scary from that standpoint.
Yeah. Hey, going back to high school. So you go to De La Salle, you play for Coach Thor, and now you get to coach with him. I'm just curious, what's that like? Dave Thorson, a good friend of mine and somebody I think very highly of, but I'd love for you to share. What's that experience been like transitioning from playing for the guy to being on staff with him?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, I think obviously to have somebody here that knows me, that's been around me since junior high age, understands, you know, my competitive nature, you know, truly has my back and what we're doing here and wants to help me help this program become successful, I think is important and key. You know, and he's a really good coach and he's a good mentor and he's a good developer. He's passionate about it every day, bringing energy, excitement. You know, all that stuff is what you want when you try to build a staff, especially in the early stages. And, you know, I was fortunate that, you know, he was able to get on the road at Drake and at Colorado State and get a lot of really good seasoning and be able to come here with new ideas and new material and new concepts and you know, challenge myself and the rest of our staff, just like we all try to do. You know, I want coaches here that that bring, again, a different perspective. But at the end of the day, also bring what Coach brings, which is that that respect for the game that you know every day he's going to bring it. Respect for the seat. You know, being an assistant coach here, I realize and I can vouch for how special it is to work here and to work for this program. And I think you have people like that type of energy and vibe, it trickles throughout the entire program. And then that's what you want from staff on down to support staff to the players when you're trying to win. And I think the best league in the country, you got to have every type of piece of momentum that you possibly can.
And that league keeps getting better, huh? Look, a couple of years out. What do you think about this Big Ten expansion?
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't think I remember where I was when I got the news about the USC UCLA edition and additions. And I don't think in my wildest dreams, you know, I would ever be saying or talking to the UCLA and USC staff about being league opponents, you know. But if you look across the landscape of what's happening right now, especially when you talk about college football, you know, it's all up for grabs. And so it kind of is what it is. And it's our job to, you know, continue to put forth the best team and have the best program that we have. And you know, I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting for fans. It'll be obviously something new for us to navigate as far as now travel wise and schedule wise and figure all that stuff out. But I think change is inevitable. And I think from a leadership standpoint, you know, I don't think complaining about it or being down about it does much. You know, it kind of is what it is. And now we've got to find the right way to navigate it so we can still be successful.
Yeah. Well, exciting. You think about going into Pauley Pavilion or the football team going to the Rose Bowl in the regular season. I think for fans, there will be some interesting opportunity to follow their Golden Gophers West, right? And maybe Northwest at some point, and maybe a few other schools as we continue to watch that thing expand. So you go to Northwestern for the first couple of years of play and then come back and play for Minnesota. Talk about those decisions as a young person, how you landed at Northwestern, incredible school, and then what it was like coming back home.
Yeah, I was able to, you know, fulfill an early dream of playing significant minutes as a freshman and being fortunate to start as a freshman. For me, during the recruiting process, that was kind of a big deal to me. Not that anything was given to me, but again, going back to my childhood, I just wanted to play. I was that kid. I wanted to be involved as much as possible and didn't want to be in a redshirt situation, didn't want to be in a situation where there was a bunch in front of me and I knew I was going to have to, you know, be lucky and fortunate my first year. I wanted to go somewhere where I had the opportunity to compete for major things, minutes starting, et cetera, right away. And that's what Northwestern provided. And I was recruited by Kevin O'Neill, who recruited me super hard since my sophomore year and had a ton of trust in him and his staff. And obviously the education piece, you know, played a factor. There you go. So to be able to go there and learn and grow for 2 years and be able to, you know, play for a Kevin O'Neill and then play for a Bill Carmody, those were special times. And those were situations where it's now looking back on it has helped me as a coach. You know, those are two different completely styles, two different completely systems, two different completely personalities. I think I love the fact that it weren't always easy times there, because you learn as a player how to what you should and shouldn't do, you know, how to navigate that scene. And now as a head coach, you know, I can relay and fall back on my experiences as a player in times that were difficult. And I can look back on, okay, you know, here's what made us successful. Here's why we got out of that. Here's why we didn't. Here's what the players are thinking. Here's what they're going through. You're able to kind of, you know, peel it back and see it from that lens, which I think is important. And then made the decision to transfer here when you know, Coach O'Neill left after my freshman year to go to the NBA. It was at a time where, you know, I wasn't able to transfer. So Northwestern starts on trimesters really late, and he didn't decide to leave until about, I think, a week before school started. So, it kind of rocked my world. But, again, that has helped me today because you're dealing with the transfer portal. And so I know what kids are going through and dealing with and thinking and feeling, you know, if there's a coach or a circumstance at their previous school that they didn't feel comfortable with and they want to look to make a change. So I understand that. I don't penalize kids for that, you know, and able to look at them and say, hey, I've been there too, you know. And then when they get here, to understand what it's like to join a program and join a new staff and a new coach. So I think all those experiences in college have really helped mold my mentality. They've helped me grow probably a little bit quicker as a head coach because I got, you know, that firsthand experience under my belt. And it's something that I don't take lightly. And it's something that I really try to fall back on. Even today, now, as I make decisions or I talk to my team or I think about my team or I think about the upcoming season, I really try to fall back and remember as much as I can when I was in similar situations or what it was like when I was a player.
I hadn't thought about that experience with the dynamics in the transfer portal now and kids moving all the time. And so I can imagine you can be wise counsel. So talk about it. It had to be quite awe-inspiring when you find out I'm going to be a Big Ten head coach, right? And when you landed on that opportunity, we're all grateful that you're here. How does leadership look different for you now as a head coach? And by the way, you look around the Big Ten and you see some pretty impressive leaders along your side, right?
There's a ton of leaders in this league. There's a ton of big-time Hall of Fame level coaches in this league. There's unbelievable tradition in this league. There's no room for slippage. You've got to bring it every single day. And it's definitely iron sharpens iron. I mean, these guys have made me better already, even in year one, because they force you to. You have to rise to their level of greatness and competitiveness and preparation. You know, I thought that my first head coaching job would be at a Big Ten school, I'd probably be lying.
Not bad, man.
No, place to start. No, there's no question. I know I'm extremely fortunate. I know this does not happen very often. This is not, you know, the status quo. I'm extremely fortunate to be here, to be in this position. I know a lot of things had to happen to and hit right for this to work out. At the same time, you know, what I told Mark and President Gable is I truly believe I'm the right person for this job. I think there's a lot of people that could do it. A lot of people could be in my shoes, but I firmly believe that I'm the right person to guide this program and point us in a direction to be successful. And so, you know, my biggest thing is just continue to grow and to learn. I want to try to improve just like I ask my players to improve every single day. And from year to year, get better. And I want to be surrounded by people that want to continue to get better, that growth mindset, especially as a young coach. You know, again, I know the experience is not stacked in my favor. So I have to try to outwork people and think differently and be creative, but, you know, just extremely humbled and honored to be in this position, because again, this is not the norm. This has not happened very often. Trust me, there's been jobs at much lower levels that I couldn't get, that I was either a finalist for, or some of them couldn't even get involved in. And so there is an element of luck a little bit to it, and timing. Thankfully it's worked out in my favor.
Yeah, no doubt. And I will say, I'm a basketball junkie. I'm in the community around the game all the time, and the vibe is great. I mean, your humility, your leadership style, your approach. I think that growth mindset notion, such a powerful lesson for youth and for the youth that we're serving at the Y. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute, get your perspective on it. But hey, one thing that's kind of cool about Minnesota right now is the local talent is so rich. I mean, it's really remarkable when you look at the Jalen Suggs, the Chets, the Jones brothers. And now I see these 22s and 23s and 24s coming up. This is a really impressive hotbed. You probably don't want to say that too many times out loud, right? Yeah. But how do you look at the growth and the talent here in the Twin Cities and in this broader region?
It's definitely gotten to a very high level, and it's been pretty consistent. You know, I think sometimes you recruit different areas or different states, and you know they might be hot for a year or two and then kind of dry up for a year or two. Well, I think Minnesota's been pretty consistent developing talent, you know, from the low to the mid to the high. And we've been fortunate, you know, in the last probably 10 to 12 years, there's been some exceptionally high talent. You look at the guys that have been drafted and that were and are in the NBA. You know, I think a lot of credit goes to just the skill development of programs, whether that's, you know, traveling, starting at a younger level, those coaches coaching them the right way. And then that's transitioned to high school. I think we have some of the best high school coaching in the country. I think it goes now to, you know, whether it's trainers or workout guys that work on skill development and are true skill development people. And credit goes to the players for understanding you have to continue to get better, right? You can't, if you want to be good, you can't take days off. And I think kids in this state have seen the success that others have had and want it, and understand that, you know, it doesn't just happen, that you have to put the work in. And so I think we have a hardworking, high IQ, amateur level of player right now. That's exciting. And it's fun to recruit. And we're going to continue to recruit. I mean, I think if you look across the board in the Big Ten, most teams that have success have a good amount of in-state talent on their roster. I think that's mm-hmm. just always been the tradition of the Big Ten, of this league. And so, you know, we'll continue to do that. It's got to be the right talent and the right pieces that fit us. But, you know, every year Minnesota has produced players that can help you win and help you advance the tournament. And at the end of the day, that's what it's really all about.
Yeah, it's exciting. Good to see that growth. And we'll keep some of those guys home.
Yeah.
Program. Hey, I do want to shift gears and maybe take it to a slightly different tone. So here, your hometown of Minneapolis, my hometown of Minneapolis, we've been through it. And this last few years, the pandemic, of course, but the social unrest, the racial dynamics we've been up against. And I just am curious if you would reflect. I think you were at Xavier at the time when George Floyd was murdered, and you were in an assistant role, but probably looking from Cincinnati towards the upper Midwest to say, hey, what's going on there? What was your reaction? Were you surprised? And where do you think we are now as it relates to this path towards greater social justice?
I remember very vividly, you know, being at home in Cincinnati and seeing the video footage on the news, seeing the coverage on the news, following it very closely on the news. And not only that day, but that weekend and the weeks following. You know, my biggest thing is, you know, how can we as a community and as a state, you know, kind of flip the narrative? And is there a way that we can spin this to create change and to be able to put us in a better position down the line so that the generations that are coming up hopefully don't have to deal with things that you and I have from our childhood all the way till now? And try to just make it as positive as we can in a learning experience as we can. because the reality is, yeah, it happens here, unfortunately, but it happens everywhere across the country. It's just not always on film. And I think that that's the harsh reality that we all have to realize and understand that, you know, really in today's day and age, that there's a lot going on across the board. Nobody's immune to injustice, right? Nobody's immune to dealing with inequality. And I think, you know, if we can somehow, again, see the damage that it's done and see the divide that it can do to people and to communities and to families, hopefully it will speed up change. But I think at the same time, understand that, you know, change just doesn't happen overnight. It's not something that we're going to drastically see different, you know, in September. But that can't, like, temper our drive to create change. I think sometimes it's easy to fall in that bubble where if you don't have that instant feedback or that instant gratification, then all of a sudden, is the advocacy as loud? Are we able to be consistent and persistent with trying to create change, knowing that the work we're doing might not even pay off until we're long gone? Yeah. But somebody has to lay the groundwork for many, many, many years to come of just how we think as a society and how we operate as a society, and to really try to impact the much, much younger people in our communities so that they come up seeing and painting with a broader brush.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that whole flip the script notion and the positivity that you're talking about there. And I think about this every single day because we're serving thousands of young people through the Y. And I'm curious, as a young Black man growing up, or even as a child, do you remember a race showing up in your upbringing or in your life?
I mean, I think we would be kind of naive if you polled majority of people that are people of color that they faced it at some point, at some level. Could be major, could be minor. You know, one thing that probably was a benefit to me is, you know, being an athlete and being athletic, you know, probably get shielded a little bit, but you also get a different type of scrutiny. You know, I remember in high school, you know, playing at different places, and the narrative was that, you know, because we were a city school that was, you know, predominantly minority, we probably weren't very well educated, and we didn't have, you know, academic standards that met what people thought was achievable, you know. So you dealt with that a little bit. You know, I grew up, you know, in the 90s when there was some racial profiling back then with police that was pretty intense. I don't know if you remember in the 90s with just, you know, getting pulled over for random reasons, we'll say. So, yeah, you know, you've dealt with that. You've dealt with, I think some people put ceilings on people based off of who they are or what they look like physically. And so you deal with that with the notion of, you know, only being able to reach a certain level or be put in a box as far as what you can or can't do, just because, you know, back then it wasn't seen as much. You know, there wasn't a Black president. There weren't, especially in sports, like a quote unquote Black quarterback. None of that had really happened. And so, again, it was easy to kind of go with the norm of what people see and what the reality was. But at the same time, again, I think there's a lot of issues that are just now coming to light that have kind of been hidden for a while. And now it's just kind of the breaking point, it feels like, a little bit. And so it's more of where we can go from here. You know, I think what's done is done, and we need to continue to learn from it and to grow from it. But it's like, how can we take our experiences and help people down the line? And I think if we don't think like that, that we're going to be in a constant state of just spinning and not making progress, and realizing that for this thing to change, because it it is pretty deep that we have to constantly find little ways to create progress.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that perspective. I'm curious, what are you as a in a significant leadership role and a visible leadership role in the community? You have so much ability to influence for good. What is your recommendation or suggestions for me and for the why? What would you like to see the why be about these days?
First of all, I love, what you guys do and what the why provides. Those are one of the places that we would bike to, whether it was the Blaisdell Y, that was major. I mean, there were always games and activities going on at the Blaisdell Y. Pickup, especially in the summertime, was huge at the Blaisdell Y. One of my friend's fathers got us memberships to the Uptown YWCA. So we would go there and, on Sundays, we were in junior high, lift a little bit and get on the court and shoot free throws and use the pool and all that stuff. I think what the Y can provide, especially for, much younger youth, is get them just getting out the house. I think that's big, especially when there is downtime in the summer. And with downtime, whether it's my players or whether it's, kids that aren't my players, I know downtime a lot of times rolls back to either being lazy or being up to no good. And so I think it's having those programs where kids have somewhere to go, and so they're not just in front of the TV or in front of video games or doing things they're not supposed to do, but they're able to get out there and interact and socialize and challenge themselves. And again, try unique things and do unique things. It doesn't always have to just be basketball. It doesn't have to be a sport. But providing kind of those activities, I think they're invaluable. And I think it's something that I hope, when it gets out there, that kids really start getting back to taking advantage of.
That's great. Hey, glad to hear that you spent some time there. No wonder you could play. Haven't spent all that time at the Y. That's good. Hey, last question. What brings you hope?
I think being around young people, I think, whether it's through recruiting, through players that are on my team, I think being around that young generation consistently and feeling their energy and feeling their vibe, it does help push me forward. They're kind of not they're naive to some things, which I think is nice and good and fresh. They keep you up to date and up to speed with kind of current activity. But I think just being around them and seeing that, I think the majority of them, there is hope, and the majority of them want, this to be a better place, and they have so much to give and they have so much life to live that I think they do rejuvenate everyone, hopefully. And that it's not, sometimes you can watch the news or get on social media and it can be so negative and you just feel like that's what it is. When in reality, yeah, there definitely is negative standpoints of different things. But when you're on the ground level day to day with a lot of these kids and young men, that there is positivity. Again, there is hope. There are good people that want to do the right thing, that want to make change. I think, one positive through all this is there is much more advocacy for a lot of social injustice, not just with race, but with gender, with religion, with sex. You see that now, whereas before you didn't see that. And I think young people now, they realize the power that they have, the voice that they have, and they're not scared to use it. And so to me, that's encouraging. And now it's like, how can we help them with that? How can we help them with their energy and with their passion to create this change that you see through marches or parades or fundraisers across the country, or just people that stick out for what they believe in and what a lot of us value as being right. And so, again, I think it's our job to help coach them and encourage them to be those leaders that I think they can, because we need to rely on them to get this thing really going.
Yeah. Hey, I so appreciate your leadership perspective. And I come at this kind of honestly. I started going to Gopher basketball games when I was 3 years old, and I haven't missed a season since. And will continue to be in the stands cheering you on. Ben Johnson, head coach, University of Minnesota, Golden Gopher basketball. We are so thrilled that you were able to join us today. You are a leader for good, and I am grateful for your time. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I really, again, I love what you do. It's important to me, and I appreciate you having me on today.
You got it. We'll follow those Big Ten wins, even against the UCLAs and USCs at some point, huh?
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Conversations On, where the YMCA of the North engages with local and national leaders hoping to inspire you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.